This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello, welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name's Jamie.
My name's Caitlin. You're doing your sexy radio voice.
I'm a ghost that hides in the walls and tries to raise you. I'm a sex ghost with a face mask.
And I'm a hot young ingenue who's good at singing.
Ingenue, code for prey.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited for that.
So, okay, this is the Bechdel cast where we talk about the portrayal of women in movie inspired by the Bechdel test, which requires that two women in a movie have names. They talk to each other and their conversation has to be something about something other than a man.
Grow up. Never happens.
Never happens. Never once in the history of cinema.
This is an episode I feel like we've been talking about doing for at least 6 months.
Yeah. Well, because once every 2 to 3 episodes, you find a way to mention it.
Because I love to shoehorn in.
Schumacher?
A Schumacher mention. This is our second episode of a Joel Schumacher movie. Third?
Yes. So, I think only the second. We did Flatliners, and that's
it. No, and we did
was a Tim Burton Batman.
Okay. Well, lots of Schumacher undertones in this podcast. I love a mediocre man. That's why I will always be like, you know what? If it's a Joel Schumacher joint, sure, he deserves another chance. Absolutely, he doesn't. But he's like 5 million years old. He's going to be making movies till he dies, and we just have to get used to it. I love how mediocre Joel Schumacher is. He is just emblematic of just infinite chances for kind of no reason.
I agree that he's mediocre, and I hate him for that reason. So we have
different takes on that. Right. I mean, generally mediocre men are not okay. For some reason, Joel Schumacher, he at least tries to take creative risks that just have historically never once worked, but he keeps doing it and he keeps getting opportunities to do it. And it's just like so many female directors with talent are going to, you know, die in obscurity, but Joel Schumacher is going to make 5 million movies and they're all going to be fine. Except this one is actually really spectacularly bad.
Oh, God. I thought you were going to end it spectacular and I was going to be upset.
That said, I've seen this movie at least 20 times.
Oh, God.
We'll get into it. It's the Phantom of the Opera episode, the Joel Schumacher film. The 2004 Christmas movie season was maybe like my favorite Christmas movie season growing up because Phantom of the Opera came out, horny for that, right? A Series of Unfortunate Events starring Jim Carrey was the first movie I ever saw that made me viscerally angry, and I really hated it, and so that was fun. Also, National Treasure, which I loved. A hot season. A real hot season.
Well, who can argue with that? hey, let's introduce our guest.
Yeah.
She is a writer. She's a video essayist. She has this whole series of wonderful video essays.
Including an amazing one on this movie.
We're big fans. We were so almost synced up there.
we did it. It's early, but there.
It's 10 a.m.
It's happening.
What are we doing?
I got those little things from 7-Eleven. They put them next to the creamers, but it's actually like caffeine shots. I've got a couple if anyone needs a
me.
And, yay! And that voice you're hearing is our guest who we started to intro and then forgot to do it the rest of the way, Lindsay Ellis.
Thank you guys.
Thank you so much.
You happen to be doing a podcast on my favorite crack, so I'm so here for this.
Oh, we're so excited to have you. So, Phantom of the Opera, you have a history with this franchise.
Yeah. I feel like I've done 3 30-plus minute videos.
We've seen
them all. Don't worry, we've watched them.
Phantom of the Opera. I don't front with my Phantom, but it's like probably my oldest fandom. And it's like there's something about Phantom, like most things you kind of outgrow, but Phantom just, the stank never leaves you. So you just kind of got to own it.
So when did you see this 2004 Joel Schumacher Phantom?
Well, I first, when I was like, you know, a sad 15, 16 year old, I mean, I actually wasn't that sad. Like Phantom drew me out of an even sadder phase of my life, which is when I was like into nu metal and Limp Bizkit and really angry and sad all the time. And then I discovered musical theater. So there's a logical progression for you. And I was like really obsessively into it. And that's actually how I met like several of my like current business partners.
Nice.
Was through Phantom of the Opera fandom in 2001. Like my current co-writer, Angelina, I met on fanfiction.net. Same with Elisa Hansen, who now does reviews on YouTube. And Antonella and Sarah, who used to do Nostalgia Chick with me, not so much anymore because we live in different cities. But by the time the movie came out, I wouldn't say I was over it, but it was sort of like our joke old thing. We were excited at first, but then we saw that Schumacher was attached to it. And then like Antonio Banderas, who wanted it so badly.
Yeah.
And they were already making this terrible creative decision in the form of Emmy Rossum and Gerard Butler. And we were just like, oh, wow, this is going to be like just as bad as we think it will be. And I just remember what was really funny was like seeing it.
Did you see it in theaters?
Yeah, I saw it in theaters with my mother in Asheville, North Carolina. We were both like, wow. How did they mess that up so bad? You know, the show that's like, it's cheesy, but it works. How did this happen?
Jamie, what's your history?
Oh, man. I also got into fandom, I mean, freakishly young because my mom is obsessed with Phantom of the Opera. My mom also, as you know, completely unhinged. But
there's a theme with Phantom fans. Like, exactly. We're being real.
Exactly. Like
we relate to that Phantom a little too much.
And there's too much of me that I see in that because I have a very specific memory of when I was really young. I mean, probably 5 years old. So, and this directly connects to two of your videos. So, I got those Hunchback of Notre Dame puppets that they sold at Burger King.
Yes.
So I got all of those because my mom ran a daycare out of our house. And so there'd be some time every day where I'd be like, I want to be like by myself because I live here. So my mom would let me have time alone in a room. And she would give me the three puppets, Esmeralda, Quasimodo, and Phoebus, and she would turn on the original London cast of The Phantom of the Opera, and I would pretend they were Christine the Phantom and Raoul. So, and that was when I was like 5. So I was into Phantom super early. Like some of my earliest memories are listening to The Phantom of the Opera and playing with puppets by myself. So very into it. And then goth teen Jamie, my middle school choir was going to a production of Phantom of the Opera at the Boston Opera House. I remember I like had all these fishnets and like very like Phantom of the Opera super fan clothes on underneath normal clothes. And then I got to school and I was like, I'm the biggest fan of Phantom of the Opera. And I had like a skirt from Trip with like chains on it and like fishnets. And then I love this movie. It's very into it. I've seen Phantom of the Opera on stage probably 5 times.
Wow.
I've seen this movie.
I think I've actually got you beat.
Yeah?
I've probably seen it at least 15 times.
Whoa.
It doesn't get old, though. Like
I lived in New York. It was just sort of like, give me tickets. It was $25, you know. Although, like, I'm so like, oh, I'm so happy they're finally replacing Bad Phantom. Mm-hmm. James Barber. Yay, finally. You should never have hired him. He was not good.
Worse than Gerard Butler?
No.
No one is.
Well, for a Broadway Phantom, it was just like, you know, on top of being like a pedophile, he's just not a good Phantom.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the literal sense. He actually went to trial for it.
Oh,
and really?
Yeah, there was a. Oh man, it's like speaking of mediocre men getting second chances.
Ooh.
Yeah, he was accused and went to trial for I think one, but then there were two more accusers. All were under the age of 15.
Jesus
and,
Christ!
So they eventually he had a plea deal, and so he was never actually served any time. But that was,
oh,
then he was like after his probation was up in 2000. 12 or 8. I don't know. It was somewhere in the Obama years. Broadway was like, welcome back, brother. And he's been doing pretty well.
Oh, God. Why? Why do we let criminals do things?
Oh, well, I mean, that is kind of a smooth transition right into, there's a lot of preying on a minor in this movie.
Oh, yeah. That's
true.
A lot of it.
So I had never seen the movie until a couple days ago. I thought I had, but turns out I hadn't. And I didn't know what the story was. This is my first introduction.
So you hadn't seen the show?
Hadn't seen the show, not familiar. I'd never read the book.
But you don't like musicals generally, right?
I don't like musicals. But yeah, this was my first experience with Phantom of the Opera. And boy, did this movie sour my experience.
No, it's good.
He's got a lot of pain, okay?
just to illustrate a point of how much people love this. Okay, so it has 32% on Rotten Tomatoes. Uh-huh. Critically, no one liked it. Everyone said, get the electric guitar riff out of there. Right. Audience score, 84%. Like, people love Phantom of the Opera, and they won't hear no.
People will, I guess, because like when I did the video about it, I tended to focus mostly on the technical filmmaking.
Right.
For that reason, I think I didn't get a lot of pushback from fans. But I definitely remember, like, in 2005, when I was in college at the time, and, you know, that was, like, when Phantom of the Opera fandom got a shot in the arm from this new movie. And, like, there was this new wave of people who just loved the movie. And then there was the old guard that was just, like, gatekeeping. So there was, like, a war. I remember it well. But, yeah, those people, they live.
They do.
Should I do the recap?
Yeah.
Okay. Phantom of the Opera is about a young woman named Christine. She is a chorus girl in this opera house. Also in the opera house is a spooky phantom man. Is he a ghost? Is he real? We don't know, but everyone's scared of him, and everyone's like, ah!
That's literally what everyone's like.
Yeah, there's a literal ah in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Oh, there's a really obnoxious setup to this movie.
Oh, the framing device.
It's so long. It's so
and they keep going back to it.
Patrick Wilson's age makeup is.
Swarovski. That's Patrick Wilson in old makeup?
I'm pretty sure. No, yeah,
that's age makeup.
Why?
Yeah, it's not that bad, but. I mean, the makeup's not bad.
Right, the makeup's not bad. I mean, it was realistic. I thought that was just an old man. But, yeah. Like, why wouldn't they have just cast an old... Anyway.
I do love that Patrick Wilson puts on old man voice. Sounds really... A collector's season. It's like, okay, we get it, you're old.
Yeah. I mostly fast-forwarded through those parts.
Yeah. But those are the worst parts.
You missed nothing.
They're so extraneous. Yeah. They don't need to be there. They add nothing.
No, they don't.
Add product placement. There's like, there's Swarovski.
Okay.
I think there was another one. It was like another brand that existed in the 1870s. Okay, so the show takes place in the 1870s, which doesn't make sense because that was during the Franco-Prussian War and the opera was under siege and not an opera. But the show, it's like 1871. It's like, okay, so in the movie, I think they bump it back to like 1888 or a time that made sense when the novel took place. So I guess that's one thing the movie fixed. Thank you.
Weird that Andrew Lloyd Webber was like, no, let's kick it back another 15 years for whatever reason.
Well, I guess maybe it was like the dresses were cooler in the 1870s than in the 1880s.
High fashion.
It's true. It's true, though. I didn't like those bustles.
But also, this movie does not abide by any manner of like, I mean, there's some that's more realistic, but there's like the time that where Christine is wearing like a slip with like a slit up the leg.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, totally.
My corset 18. On the outside of my nightgown.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, let's
And also, I'm a singer, but I'm in the ballet.
Right.
But you're not going to see me do much of either. Like,
yeah.
She.
Okay.
Okay, sorry.
There's a spooky ghost. Carlotta, she's like the prima donna, diva, like the star of all the operas.
The only person who knows what movie she's in.
Oh, Minnie Driver is great.
Minnie Driver kills it. She's great.
Different things happen where she's like, I'm not going to sing, or she's, you know, refusing to perform. So they're like, how about this Christine girl? She can sing. But they're like, how can she sing?
Can she sing? I mean, that's about what I sounded like when I was 17, so okay. I'm ready to be the prima donna of the premier French opera.
Oh, is that how old she is? In the movie?
She's aged down in the movie.
Oh.
And I think that Emmy Rossum was 16 when this was being filmed.
She was underage.
Yikes. Because she kisses two old men in this movie.
She kisses two men far older than her, yeah.
So she's like, yeah, I can sing. Because it turns out she's been taking singing lessons from a wall? an angel of music who she thinks is her dead father's spirit teaching her how to sing.
This movie is just like drenched in Electra Complex. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. She thinks the ghost is her daddy.
No. She thinks that the ghost is an angel sent by her dad.
Right.
So it's basically as bad. But like, because as he lay dying, she's like, I'm going to send you an angel, honey. Don't worry.
and so the phantom somehow
or other finds out about this. And he's like, ooh.
Right. How does he know about that and know about her?
Maybe he was I don't know. Yeah. Maybe he was watching her dad die.
He's like, I don't know why I've been stalking her for a long time.
Maybe he was in the walls.
Maybe he died in her dressing room.
He tends to do that.
Her dressing room that she has herself alone.
As a chorus girl. That was another part where I was like, okay, is she supposed to be in Carlotta's dressing room? But it looks like it's all her stuff. And the Phantom wouldn't have rigged Carlotta's dressing room so that he could just appear wherever.
In like a two-way mirror that like slides open.
But that rules. To be fair, that rules, and it's a very exciting stage moment. And
I'm just like, in the book, it was her dressing room. So
it was, yeah. Why does she have such a big dressing room?
she's a star.
She's a teen orphan. Yeah. They don't get nice dressing rooms.
Love those in France. Come see Teen Orphan. She can't sing, but she is a teen and an orphan, and she's cute.
Good enough. Yeah. Okay, we'll put her corset on the outside of her clothes. Yeah.
Anyway, we're about 15 minutes
right
into
now. We have not gotten much further. So she thinks this angel of music is singing to her and teaching her how to sing. Turns out this phantom, who is real, approaches her and she's like, oh, wait, you're a man, but you're still my angel of music. And they have a whole song about it. She has no reaction to learning that he's a man.
Her eyeshadow does get darker, though.
Oh, sorry.
It gets very, very, very smoky.
It does get, by the time she's in the gutter, she is in full smoky.
Yeah. It's like as the further down she goes, the smokier it gets. And it looks so, like, it looks like when I was 13 and trying on mom's makeup for the first time, it's like darker.
There's a lot of long shots of Emmy Rossum just like looking like she's basically falling asleep.
Like mouth kind of agog.
And it's like, oh, that's what love is. Just
entranced by your angelic voice, Gerard Butler.
So I didn't realize that, like, this movie does a very bad job, I think, of setting up that he's supposed to be this like seductive, and she's like, oh, I like that. I love you. Like, I did not realize that they were having like a love story. Like, it didn't.
It's almost
nothing
like Jill Schumacher's really not good at things.
Right. It's almost.
Yeah.
Like, they just,
and
like,
then on top of that, Gerard Butler's doing an exceptionally bad job of being seductive.
And Emmy Rossum is like 16 and has never gone outside. So she doesn't know how to look like seduced, I guess, which is already gross. Why did they cast a 16-year-old? Anne Hathaway really wanted the part, too.
Really?
Anne Hathaway, who can sing and was the correct age in 2005.
I think she would have done well.
Man, Anne Hathaway and Antonio Banderas. Mm-hmm. What could have been?
That would have been tight.
Might have been.
Poor Emmy Roth. And this, like, didn't really launch anyone's career in the way that I think the movie intended to.
Mm-mm.
I mean, Patrick Wilson's
didn't get hurt.
Right.
Like, he wasn't actively harmed by it.
I would think perhaps that Emmy Rossum was maybe damaged by this.
I think so
movie.
Too. She was like maybe on the rise and then kind of stalled. She was in The Day After Tomorrow and then kind of went away until Beautiful Creatures, which, yes, I saw.
Yeah? Oh, I didn't see it.
Yeah, she was like the sexy older sister.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that look does not work on her.
Well, and then now she's like relegated to TV and seems to be doing well. But I feel for her this way, because imagine like having the rest of your life affected by a mistake that didn't seem like a mistake when you were 16.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Basically, it's her teen pregnancy.
So he's like seducing her and she's kind of into it, question mark? I don't really know. But he shows her this, like, wax sculpture he made of her.
Of her in a wedding dress.
Yes. And she also has no reaction to that. She's just like,
she passes out. Down.
Oh, she passes out.
Yeah, she passes out.
Oh, because women be fainting. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that is scary.
So creeped out.
But then, okay,
she faints.
But then after that, when she wakes up, to me, she does not have an appropriate reaction to a creepy man whose face is half hot and half under a mask. Making a sculpture of her, and then she's just like, yeah, okay, you're my friend now, or something.
Well, not to jump to anyone's defense, but she does think that he's like an angel.
Yeah, I think the moment she rips off the mask is when she's like, oh, you're ugly. I guess you're not an angel.
Angels and then, can only be hot.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of confusing because, like, when you, like, both in the show and in the movie, from that point on, you don't see her again until the opera.
Right.
And then she runs to the roof like, I'm really scared, Raul. And he's like, don't worry, honey. It's not real. So I guess, like, at that point's where she kind of turns on him, but it's all really implicit.
There's like it, yeah. The story is so clunky the more it's, you look at it.
Bad,
but she okay. So she meets him. She's like, he's an angel. He made a wax statue of me that we have to assume he has sex with.
Definitely.
No. There's no way. There's not a cavernous hole in that wax statue. So, anyways, she wakes up and she's like, well, that happened. But then he does start to behave more and more threatening. After that, where not that her reaction at any point in this story totally makes sense, but if I'm remembering correctly, she gets out and that's when he starts being like, you have to recast the show. And then he like causes the fucking chandelier thing. And
he causes it to wiggle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't fall yet. That's the funny thing about the chandelier
falling.
It's
freaking people out.
It has no consequence. Kind of happened.
As far as we know, no one's hurt.
Well, yeah. He does. So the chandelier
I'm thinking of the show because in the show it falls at the end of Act One. Yeah. Whenever he goes, like, you will curse the day you did not do all that the Phantom asks of you, and then he cuts the chandelier as a threat. And then in the movie, he just cuts it because he feels like it.
Because
like, oh, I forgot to do this. Like, I left the oven on.
We have to justify the framing device.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But before that,
he hangs
a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the rafters, and then everyone's like, "Ooh, this is a ghost to be reckoned with."
By the time people are dying, I'm like, okay, it makes sense for her to be scared now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then she still sort of is and then sort of isn't throughout the rest of the movie to the point where
scared?
At the end.
Am I scared? Am I horny?
This is kind of the genius of the Lloyd Webber version because this was the first version where they really play up the, ooh, she's kind of into it. And I think that's also why, I know that's why this is the most successful version. Because like in the book, he's just kind of like a creepy guy and she's never into it. Like she pities him like in the Frodo pitying Gollum kind of way. Mm-hmm. But like the second she sees him and she's like, oh, and then he's like, sorry.
Because he looks like shit.
Yeah. Well, he's wearing the mask, but he's just like, hey, I'm not an angel. I'm a 50-year-old man who's in love with you. Come to my basement. And she's like, he's going to kill and eat me. I have to just placate him and do whatever he says. And so she does this for like 2 weeks where she's like, no, you're great. You're awesome. I think you're really nice looking.
The things that women have to do for men
to not
get murdered.
Yeah. And then, so then he lets her, like after 2 weeks, she convinces him and he's like, okay, fine. I'll let you go back into the opera. And then she tells Raul everything like, oh my God, there's this creepy guy and he's going to kill me. And then he overhears it. And that's when he snaps and loses it.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
That does not happen in this movie.
No,
like
it does
that
not.
At all.
No, in this movie, she's kind of into it.
Toxic
she's
romance,
like,
baby.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like moments where he's like wrapping his arms around her and she's all like, oh, I'm in a shampoo commercial.
There is a part, and this was my favorite part. I remember when I was seeing the movie when I was 12, I was like, oh, during Point of No Return, which is an insane number in the movie. It just looks
crazy. I like
crazy.
That song, though. I like most of the songs. Oof. But
you should see, like I say, like watch the Royal Albert Hall version and be like, wow, this is even better when people can sing.
Right.
And there aren't random tango dancers.
There, I love the tango dancers. There's a point in this version of it where Emmy Rossum looks like she's straight up going to pass out again because she's so turned on.
Like, she can't handle it.
Where they're like, you know, the peak of that song it looks like her eyes are like fluttering. I was like, she's sick. Something, someone give her water.
Also, her like straps of her dress keep falling off her shoulders, and she's like, I'm getting more and more naked as I get so horny with this song. And then he, I skipped half of the movie, but who cares? It doesn't make any sense, and it's fucking terrible.
The story,
nothing makes any sense.
Nothing. It really doesn't. It's amazing how like that doesn't bother you when it's on stage, because there's like, I think there's just a lot more suspension of disbelief inherent in the medium of theater.
Totally.
So I think it's just like the bizarre plot holes just kind of wash over you in the stage version, where in the movie version they're just spectacularly glaring because everything is literal. There's right. no sort of, you know, magical realism going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it really emphasizes how much this story makes no fucking sense.
And it's just, it's adapted really not well at all. Like, there's things that could have been done in this adaptation that would have made it transition a little smoother, but it just didn't. And then there's like weird moments where people are speaking dialogue should be sung, but they're speaking rhyming dialogue. Yeah. We're just like, why aren't you?
There's like, you're my bride. That, we don't need to hide.
That part of Masquerade drives me crazy, where Patrick Wilson and Emmy Rossum are just talking to each other in
But the
verse.
Music is still going.
Right. Like, stop it. I was like, why can't you just... Patrick Wilson can actually sing.
Yeah. He was like Minnie Driver, ironically, the only person who was dubbed.
Right, yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so the basic story is that there's a guy who's a creep, and he is gaslighting Christine, and she also is, like, in love with and being gaslit by Raoul. Everyone's like, there is no phantom. And she's like, there is he? I don't know. He's an angel or
Which
something.
Which fuckboy will she choose?
Right. And then the phantom gets more and more dangerous and threatening, and then by the end, he is, like, murdering people and, like, making these insane demands, and then he drops a chandelier on everyone, but no one is hurt, and it's fine. So there are no stakes
but the
or consequences.
Opera's burned down.
But, right,
I guess that's like, they're like, well, this needs a consequence. I guess it burns the opera down, and now there's no opera.
And then he takes Christine into his, like, basement level apartment. And
I had an apartment like that.
And then Raoul goes to save her, of course, and the Phantom's like, you either have to be with me to save Raoul's life, or I'll kill you both, or who knows what his plans are.
And it's so fun. Like, I love the way that scene is shot. Like, he just sneaks up behind Raoul, or like, or just walks up to him with a noose. He's like, here, buddy, hold still. And he just, like, loops it over his head and then, like, fastens him to a grate. But it's just like, okay, so it's a noose, which is a thing you hang people with. But he's like
also tied
to a grate. So is he just going to strangle him with the noose, like manually? Like he's just going to, he can't be hung. He's tied to a grate.
Your video essay was the first time that was ever, I was like, oh yeah, he's probably fine.
And like there's no threat here. Like maybe he's about to like pull out a gun and shoot him, but like the... The rope makes
sense. But he keeps pulling, yanking at the rope, like that will eventually be.
I don't know why they did it. Like, because, like, in the show, it's like a magical realism thing. Like, he throws the rope on him, and then the rope magically kind of lifts. So he's actually being, like, you know.
Yeah.
That's so much a phantom of, like, let's just throw something into fog.
I hate how this movie doesn't commit to the magical realism. It's just like, you either do it or don't. Like I talked about, like, in the show, because they have, like, the Jean Cocteau arms in the movie, which is, like, this sort of, like, oh, I'm being seduced and being brought into this magical, mysterious world. And they're, like, lifting this thing from Jean Cocteau's Beauty and the Beast, which are these arms stick jutting out of the wall and holding candles. And then they never do anything like that for the rest of the movie.
Right.
It's just straight literalness. There's
it's no... like, commit to some stuff like that.
Yeah, commit
or
to some stylism
don't.
So the glaring plot holes don't, you know? Just
which
like...
is at least, I mean, that's, like, the least you could ask of Joel Schumacher. He's like, commit to your bad choices.
Yeah.
But he doesn't do that in this one.
No. This movie could have been at least consistently fun and bizarre.
Yeah. But there, it's just...
No, it has to be serious.
Very disjointed. The addition of that weird sword fighting scene.
Well, the sword fight leads to one of the talking points I had about the treatment of women in the movie, which is that... So in that sword fight, and we see this in a ton of movies, where two men are fighting over a woman. The men are fighting, the woman is being fought for, so it's like... Women are often rendered just so passive in situations like this. Same thing with, like, a woman having to be saved. Like, she has to wait around to be saved by a man. This isn't a huge component of this movie, but I think it was worth mentioning that there was just, like...
Well, Well, it's one of two major scenes where Christine is completely sidelined as two men fight slash sing slash argue about her. Because it's that sword fighting scene where she's just totally like,
literally watching, like,
stop.
I think I can think of that, like, that Quinn from Daria being like, don't fight over me.
That was a great Quinn. and then in the climactic scene too, where Gerard Butler's like, I'm gonna make your boyfriend hurt, and he's like, it's okay, I'll, you know. And Christine's just standing there like, oh, what do I do?
Well, she has a little more agency in that scene because she then kisses the Phantom.
I would argue that is such a crazy, like, I get, I don't know. She's sidelined for the majority of that scene and then is like, how do I get out of here? Maybe if I give him a little kissy, he'll let us go, which you couldn't bank on working, but it does.
Uh-huh. It works in the show.
It does. Oh, it really works a lot better than the show.
In the movie, it's just like, I just feel like Raoul's like tied to that grate in Christ pose, just looking on with confusion. Like, what is this supposed to accomplish?
Why is anyone here?
Well, the kiss that she gives to the Phantom to like placate him ignores the fact that like she's just doing this out of desperation because she's like, my life's in danger, Raoul's life's in danger. I've been gaslit by every fucking person in this entire movie throughout the whole fucking story. Mm. I gotta kiss this guy to like make him not murder people. But the movie frames it as this, like, big romantic.
Yeah. The music swells.
The camera like spins.
And like it's just like,
this is not romantic. Like, what are you doing, movie?
There's a cinematographer. John Matthiessen is swirling around this swamp, filming an underage woman kissing Gerard Butler. Just bleak in every respect.
But, like, yeah, the point I want to make about so often in movies, this one included, we see a woman taking a very passive role in whatever's happening, just sitting idly by, watching as two men fight or a man has to save her or whatever. And it just sends a message that women can't do things, I guess. And then we as a society are like, oh, women can't do things because I've never seen them do things in media. So I don't trust them to be able to do anything.
I think more than anything, it's just like, Christine's character is like, oh, you just have to take a lot of shit. Like, she takes shit for this entire... Okay, so if we're talking about Christine...
I don't know, I relate to Christine in this regard.
But, like, so her as a character, she's set up as she misses her father. Her father was the main figure in her life. And then we're presented with two father-like figures who are fuckboys that she has to choose between, where it's like, does she choose the dangerous ghost father committing murders, or is she gonna choose
the useless guy who like walked right into a trap and now
but also is like pretty consistently like, you're making this up, it's fine, just stay with me, and is visibly older than her as well. So it's like,
well, they're supposed to be the same age. So let's...
Oh, right, because they were childhood sweethearts.
Are they supposed to? Because it was...
They are the same age.
Unless, like, he was 17 and she was 7, which honestly, in, like, 19th century France, that was probably a thing.
No, I mean, he's in the show, at least, he's supposed to be a year or two older than she is.
But he has so many, like, successes, but he's only supposed to be 18?
Well, I mean, Christine's 19 in the show, so he's supposed to be, like, 21. So,
okay.
I don't know why they aged Christine down. That does nothing for this movie.
Like, no, it just makes it weird.
Yeah. Like, well, he's rich, but is it that I'm guessing he's an heir?
He's a Navy officer, which is why he, like at the masquerade, he has his like naval uniform on.
Yeah. Oh.
So he's like he's a Vicomte. So he like Vicomted his way to the top of the Navy hierarchy. So he's like a sailor.
Hot.
So Christine's like a girl with daddy issues who's presented with two daddies, and she has to pick one of them.
Christine has two daddies. I mean, I would actually argue that I don't see Raoul as a father figure.
Really? I think that in this movie, he's pretty consistently, at least
he's patronizing.
Yeah.
But I don't think she sees her father in him.
Okay.
In this or any of the version. Or at least that's kind of how I took it. And that's why I guess in some ways he's less appealing to her, because she kind of wants her dad back, and so like she has made this association in her mind with the Phantom and her father.
Mm-hmm. But there is a level of security that comes with
being super rich.
Raoul, yeah.
He got her scarf back. I mean, that's nice.
He did something.
Speaking of that love triangle, I couldn't help but notice that no time is spent developing the romance between Christine and Raoul. They're like, oh, we knew each other as kids and now we're adults and we haven't seen each other for years. But guess what? We're in love.
They have that big swell of a romance number, mm-hmm. which takes place right after the murder.
On the roof.
I love that scene because it's like Bouquet gets murdered. He gets hung. She runs up to the roof and she's like, oh God, oh God, oh God, I'm freaked out. I know who did it. He's going to kill me. Oh God. And Raoul's like, don't worry, honey, it's fine. And then like the clarinets of romance start playing and they have that big all I ask of you number. Mm-hmm. They just forgot about the killing.
Right. Yeah.
But again, that like murdered.
That works in the musical.
We're in love.
It works on stage.
It works in the musical.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work here.
Well, especially because he's just like creeping around, like the phantom is just like
hiding
behind statues, and it's just like we don't need to, like, this was another like point that I made in the video, was like, we don't need to know he's here,
right?
Why do you keep cutting to him? What is the emotion you're going for? Is it tension, or are we supposed to feel bad for him? Either way, it doesn't work because this is supposed to be like their big romance, and obviously that, you know, doesn't stick because like you're like, when do they connect? Like, well, it's there, but you don't realize it because the phantom's like creeping around, pouting at the camera.
Yeah.
Like, right. And then in the musical, that's not what it is at all. Like, you don't see him just leering, you know, tiptoeing around the stage.
Like, who cares?
It's there in the Lon Chaney movie. I always think of the Lon Chaney movie.
Really?
Because that's a reflection of the book. And it's kind of funny in the book because there's this one line where she's like telling Raoul about how ugly he is. And then you hear this wail like in the distance. Like,
I look like shit.
I'm ugly. She lied to me and said I was okay.
Because I kidnapped her.
Just because I kidnapped her and told her she could never leave.
Damn it.
Well, so to the romance between Raoul and Christine, this happens a lot in movies where no time is spent developing why these characters would like each other or love each other, which I think is a symptom of female characters just not being well developed enough where they would just have a personality when we would understand why the male lead. But they're like, oh, well, you know, there's a man in the movie and he's got to have a hot lady to be with. So here's this lady character, but we're not going to do anything else to develop her. And that, I think, is so true for this movie. What is Christine's character? She has no fucking personality. She's basically just a singing voice, and then she's barely that.
Because we don't see her make a lot. Like, most of
things
this
happen
musical,
to her.
Exactly.
Decisions
yeah.
are made for her.
Right.
And this is, you know, I think in this version more than any of the others, which is kind of surprising because it's like it being the most recent
big,
one that got big enough to where there were no other versions besides the Dario Argento version from 1998, which I do not recommend.
Haven't seen it.
Don't see it.
I think you can count on one hand kind of the choices we see her actually actively making in this. We don't know that she necessarily has aspirations to be like Carlotta. We know that she takes music lessons and that music is important to her. We don't know that, but she's just forced out into this role.
There's no specific goal that she has that we know about.
That we know.
As an audience.
She could. We don't know.
Yeah. But like, that's a thing that we should probably know for any protagonist, what their desire is, what their goal is. But just kidding.
Right.
We don't have any idea in this movie.
I think the first choice that she actively makes in the movie is to kiss him.
At the end.
Yeah.
Because everything else is...
She chooses to go... She sneaks out to go to her dad's grave. That's one choice
that's
we see her
I guess,
make.
Sure.
But that's
well, it's funny because like, they're like, Christine, you have to be in the show the Phantom is forcing us to put on.
Right.
We had to be in his fan fiction opera. which is literally, he's like, I really love Don Giovanni, but it's not serious enough. I'm going to make a serious Don Giovanni. It's called Don Juan Triumphant, and it's going to be about how I'm really sexy and hot and all the ladies want me. And Don Juan doesn't go to hell in this version. That's literally what it is. Like, it's his fanfic. So, so they're like, Christine, you have to star in the Phantom's fanfic. And she's like, no. There's a scene where they're like in the chapel.
And that's she says, I'm scared. Don't make me do this.
And he's like,
and he's like
you need
be
to do it.
Fine.
He's only killed the one guy.
Right. And then he's like, I'll be there. It's like, who cares?
Yeah.
But like, I think that, the choices we see her make, she goes to her dad's grave only to be sidelined pretty much immediately.
Yeah, totally. But at that point, she's still confused, apparently, about who the angel of music is because that song happens again. Surely she knows by now. It's
they're going again for the magical realism thing that they don't commit to, where he's got like some sort of like hypnotic power over her.
Oh, it doesn't make any sense.
When she looks asleep, it's supposed yeah. to be.
Whenever she, like, does the, like, you know, lazy face thing.
Mm-hmm. It's confusing.
Yeah.
If I didn't know...
The Sarah Brightman face.
It is Sarah Brightman face. Yeah, just, like, the look kind of asleep, but kind of turned on. Like, yeah, so she is not really an active...
Not at all.
...protagonist at all.
I'm like having to suppress my Christine stan, like, because I'm like, this is absolutely true in the movie and in the show, but I'm just like, but that's not how it was in the book. In the book, she was like, it wasn't originally like this. Andrew Lloyd Webber changed it to make her more romance novel heroine, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, that totally makes sense to make this romance work. If you give Christine a more active role, it mm-hmm. would probably fall apart pretty quickly because the yeah. male protagonists, I mean, are so flawed.
If you establish, like, you? If you would like establish a desire for her where she will, like, stop at nothing to become the lead mm-hmm. of the opera, like the new right. prima donna or whatever, that's her driving thing. And then this phantom man comes along who's promising to help her with that, it would make sense why she would maybe be seduced by him and his promises and all that stuff and then go along with it. But because we have no idea what her specific goal is, it's insane that she's just like, oh, I'm enchanted and hypnotized by his genius or what. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
In the show, and certainly in the movie, I feel like the closest we can get to boiling down a motivation has to do with her dad, or somehow, like, recapturing.
Ugh, boring.
Her dad. Well, it's just bad writing.
Yeah.
But like, her motivation seems pretty closely tied to her dad, which is just lazy. Like, yeah, and
in both the book and the show, she's just kind of coasting. Like, she yeah. was studying music. Dad died. I mean, well, I guess I'll keep studying music. You know, he paid for it.
Right, but it's like, never. It's like, does she want to be here? Yeah. Do we know? And then that brings me to Madame Giry, who I just thought about this, like, the most recent time I watched it, of, like, Madame Giry is basically, I mean, she's in charge of the ballet. She's, like, the lead choreographer yes. of the ballet, and she's the mother to one of the only other female characters who speaks, Meg Giry, who is Christine's best friend. Madame Giry's basically subbing in as Christine's parent,
mm-hmm.
but it's so clear, like, there's a few times in the movie where we see Madame Giry actively make sure that Meg stays away from the Phantom. Madame Giry, we learn, knows everything about him, knows about,
like, his, kind of, like, grew up with him.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is an addition. That's a new addition to the movie, and I don't like it. Because, you know, it's like, why does he have a friend? It's not, like,
it doesn't,
it really kind of takes some of the, like, impetus for him to, like, be so desperate and, you know, obsessed with Christine if he just has, like, this, you know, emotional support all these years in the form of Madame Giry, who's been kind of helping right. him out, you well, know?
And it reflects poorly on her character, too, because it's like, oh, she knows everything and is still letting this child communicate openly with
yeah.
this very dangerous yeah. person while keeping her daughter, like, and we know she knows he's dangerous because she's keeping her biological daughter away from him at yeah. all costs. But then she's like, oh, well, yeah, he, yeah. I don't know. What are you going to do?
You know what? I'm not going to get in the way.
He had a bad childhood. We'll just...
He's just sad.
That
you know?
Begs the question.
That was...
Let him have his fun.
That frustrated me this time. I'm like, man, Madame Giry, you suck.
Yeah.
Well, totally. And that also begs the question if... I mean, it's established with this flashback that she rescues him, has him live in his, you know, dungeon apartment or whatever, and then... So what's
dungeon studio.
Wouldn't it make more sense that he was obsessed with Madame Giry and, like, she was the object of his affection because she showed him...
He likes the chase, man. Yeah, she's too emotionally available.
Right. And also, you know, women over 40.
Yeah.
Phantom's yeah. not there for women over 40.
Maybe he was there for her for a little while, and then he was like,
he's like, you got too old. I need a 16-year-old, yeah. please.
Well, just like Miranda Richardson and Gerard Butler. So if they're supposed to be the same age, then the Phantom is, yeah, I mean, he would be like well into his
45,
40s, right?
Yeah.
How old is he in the book? Like he's
in the book, he's about old? 50.
Okay. Yeah. Madame Giry, though, this was the first time that I was like, oh, the way that she's portrayed in this movie does not bode well for that character. Because yeah. it's like, oh, she's a poor guardian. Mm-hmm. She's very complicit in the fact that murders are taking
yeah.
place.
Yeah.
And then the whole keep the hand at the level of, I was like, I.
What does that mean? I mean, keep your hand at the level of your eye?
So you're supposed to do this. You're supposed to literally keep your hand next to your head because the Punjab lasso, his like weapon of choice is like, he'll try to noose you. But if your hand is up, he can't noose you.
You can push.
Schumacher.
The Punjab lasso is like, it's like, I think it's supposed to be more like a whip in the book, but they just make it a literal noose in the show, which is like, I'm going to noose you, buddy. Like, that's not a very good, you know, offensive weapon.
No, it's like, get a knife. They're okay. In the Phantom's apartment.
Yeah.
Swamp. Next to his action figures.
Swamp apartment.
Right, his action figures and his wax statues.
Also an addition, a bizarre addition. And that's unique to this version.
He plays with dolls.
He lives in basically the sewer because there's water.
Yeah.
What's the bathroom situation?
It's a lake.
Oh, the bathroom situation?
What's the bathroom situation?
It's all around.
Just go outside and pee in the lake.
Literally, I'm just like, where? But there's like, well, there's a part where like they're standing in water. Like, Is there like a phantom?
Well, see, the thing is, like, the opera has a like a drainage lake. That's what that is.
Okay.
Like, so
that's not,
you know, it's a very large building, and so like the foundation requires there to be like a drainage lake. So he builds a house next to this lake. And in the book, it actually has like running water and electricity because he's just that smart. So like,
well, in this one, yeah,
in the movie they just kind of make it like a cave.
Yeah,
that is like he kind of threw some drop cloths, you know, on the cave and some candles, and we're gonna call it sexy. Yeah.
Schumacher, where does he poop, Schumacher?
It's like it's like that episode of Broad City that Amy Sedaris is in, and she's like, "Where isn't the bathroom? It's all around. It's everywhere."
Oh, Schumacher,
have you guys seen Love Never Dies?
No,
no, I haven't. I've like actively avoided it. For a long time.
Okay, so there's like 20 versions because it's terrible and they keep workshopping it. No. But in the, like, Madame Giry and Meg
is this a sequel?
Yeah, in the sequel. They both have like really beefed up parts and like Madame Giry is like the red herring bad guy because like she's jealous because like turns out the Phantom has a kid from the one time he and Christine did the do. And
oh my god.
Oh man.
They fucked?
Yeah, they fucked. They fucked after the musical ended. Like she came back and she's like, hey, let's do it. And he's like, yeah. And then they do it. And then he's like, oh, I can't handle it and leaves. And they have this like,
what a fuck boy.
They have this.
I followed you around for years. But
in Love Never Dies where they sing about how they fucked this one time and then they describe it in song. Why did this never make it to Broadway?
I don't understand.
And then he kind of puts two and two together like, oh, we fucked 10 years ago. You have a 10-year-old. Ah!
He's a daddy.
And then like Madame Giry's like, no, he's going to take our inheritance. But then at the end of the show, turns out Meg is the bad guy.
What?
Yeah. And she like kidnaps the kid and she's going to shoot him. It's so funny because like the Phantom is talking her down. Like,
oh man.
The show ends with the Phantom talking Meg down and then Meg accidentally shoots Christine and Christine dies.
No!
Yes. Yes.
No!
And the Phantom's like, no! Well, I guess I get the kid as a consolation prize and then it ends.
That actually.
Love never dies.
Why am I so attached to Christine?
You're saying all this stuff about Christine and I'm like, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
It's hard though. It's a hard. There, especially in this movie, there's like, ooh, there's not a lot of ways
around
it.
Like, I think there's also this sort of like, there's the discussion between overrepresentation of certain harmful tropes and also certain harmful tropes that there is some truth to. You know, because you look at like the story about this teenage girl that's just being like led by her nose by all these men. Right. And it's like, while that is absolutely overdone, there's also a lot of truth to that, you know, just like because that's just what happens, especially in entertainment, you know, and because you see this reflected in like the careers of so many like actresses and me, like I think of Kesha, especially, who was just like molded into this, you know, figure that wasn't her and she didn't want to be, and they like, you know, created this public persona for her and she had to live it for so many years. And the thing about Christine, I think that's sort of like why I think we both feel a little protective of her, is like there is some truth to this
for sure.
And you know, that's sort of like it's sort of like a both thing where it's like, yeah, it's so lame that she's so passive, but on the other hand, you know, that's kind of what coming of age is for a lot of women, figuring out like, oh my god, I have to do something and make a choice because women are not socialized to be active,
right?
You know, so I guess like I think a little more in the stage version, not too much, not to like act like the stage version is superior. It's really not. I mean, it is, but it's not story wise.
It is. Yeah.
Christine
you know, it's just sort of her coming into her own is sort of like she does it in the only way she knows how, which is to placate the murderer.
And mm-hmm. considering the time period as well, mm-hmm. like, I totally agree with you because, and then it just becomes the duty of the storyteller and the filmmaker to frame that correctly and not glorify the wrong parts. Mm-hmm. I think that we could sort of maybe draw a comparison to Twilight here
yeah,
as well,
absolutely.
Where it's like a young teenager who you know young women are going to plug themselves into. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember doing that with Phantom of the Opera and Twilight, and then seeing a very like sort of dangerous relationship develop, but have the movie be like, but this is great.
Romantic.
That's the harmful part.
And that's why Andrew Lloyd Webber's version, not the movie, the musical, is the most successful version of Phantom, was because he was the one that's like, let's frame it as really sexy and
right.
let's make him really as sympathetic as a murderer can be. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, when you take a step back and you're like, woof, well, it's no wonder this is the one that took off. But
that's so bleak. It's so bleak.
Yeah. What does that say about humanity and their taste in things?
So like, while I would agree that Christine is, I mean, she's not making any choices, and any 16-year-old girl would have more of a personality than she has, or would at least
a lot
have
of that
some
is
opinions
on the acting. Like, let's be honest,
right?
I mean, like, and I, you know, and she was too young for the part. I'm sure there are 16-year-olds out there that could have pulled it off, but I think also like it's a kind of a testament to bad directing. Like, Schumacher is a notoriously bad director,
yeah.
And part of directing is training, because you can see, like, you can see the direction in the way that she's acting, like, because he's, you know, telling her like, you're seduced, you're entranced, mm-hmm. and so this is like really like. So she's just kind of clearly reacting off of these very basic, ungood direction, and that's why she looks the way she does.
Right.
And because I feel like there's a lot you could do with that blank slate if we had a better actor.
Right. It's very frustrating to watch.
I feel for Emmy Rossum in this movie.
I do. Oh,
she's
God,
so
she's so
young.
Miscast.
She's
such...
really not that good in the movie.
Oh, it's... man. I was in chamber choir, too.
Yes, it could have been any of us.
I could have been Christine.
There.
I can hit that high E.
Oh, God. Emmy Rossum playing that part the way she did, in a way that most teenage girls can sing. Was
yeah, just like,
devastating like, for talent shows for the next several years that I could go to. I'm
good.
Just like, I can sing Think of Me like Emmy Rossum. Like, of course you can.
Yeah, where they're just like the, you know, like, oh.
That really, her hitting the high note on that one always sends like a chill through my body because it's just not good.
No, it's not. You know, it's funny how many fights I've been in over that. Like, she's not good. And they're like, well, she's not supposed to be good. It's like,
listen.
What?
Listen.
Voice of an angel over here should not sound like a gravel driveway. Like, he should, and the prima donna should sound better than your high school chamber choir diva. Like,
right.
Holy no, you don't get to pull that in this movie.
Oh, another thing about those Christine and Carlotta is that Carlotta is super jealous of Christine, mm-hmm. and they're sort of like pitted mm-hmm. against each other. And
right.
it just
I love
sort of
it when like young hot women are super threatening to older women.
Right,
I feel like that's a really
well. It just perpetuates
thing.
It just like perpetuate. Like,
I want more of that because I think that's really healthy and creative.
Let's see more of that.
It's good writing.
It's really good writing. It's good writing.
Underrepresented.
Yeah.
In cinema.
It's good writing. Also, that was I mean, that's not an addition that's unique to the Lloyd Webber version. They've been like. Because, like, she didn't really care about Christine in the book, but that's been there as early as the Lon Chaney version.
Right, where she's
very
like
strange.
A bitter, but it's like, you're the best one. Like, you know, she's fine. Carlotta and Christine, I think, is, you know, a little bit of a virgin horror trope where
no,
Carlotta's...
It's more like Carlotta is decadent and conceited, and how dare
right.
she be calm.
Right.
And it's funny, because, like, everyone, especially in the movie, they play up that, like, everybody hates her because she's arrogant, but it's just like, A, she's prima donna for a reason. She puts butts in seats, and B, she doesn't seem to do anything to actively offend people. But there's that scene where she's like, you know, the prima donna scene where she's like tromping out and everybody's like mooning her and being like, good riddance. And it's just like, this doesn't make any sense. Why does everyone hate her?
She's kind of the reason that people have a job. Like,
right.
Gosh,
she's storming out again. Like,
I mean,
why are they acting like this?
I mean, well, to speak to all the other female characters, they have just as little agency, I would argue, as Christine, because Meg basically does nothing.
Who is Meg? Yeah,
who's Meg?
We don't know.
It also bothered me that Christine, whenever they were like, hey, you should play Carlotta's part, and oh man, this is what the Phantom wants, so let's maybe do it. And then she was never like, hey, wait a minute, let's step back here for a second and like maybe address the problem of getting rid of this Phantom rather than just appeasing him for no fucking reason.
Yeah.
It was crazy that they didn't have more of a...
But if I was a 16-year-old girl, they're like, you know what?
We probably shouldn't try to get rid of him. It's just too dangerous. So let's just do what he wants.
It's weird. That's like addressed several times of like, should we do something about this? They're like, no, 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 no.
No, no, no. You don't do something about the Phantom.
Just
you will
pay him his salary.
Do you see the way he wiggles that chandelier? I don't like the cut of his chin.
Well, and that's where like part of the function of Madame Giry's character is just every time someone offers a practical solution, she's sort of just like, but you can't. Yeah. And then it's
He's got magical realism.
Oh, one of the last points I wanted to bring up was because we just did an episode on V for Vendetta.
Yes.
The kidnapping / re-education trope.
Kidnapping for your betterment.
Exactly. Yeah. Kidnapping with the intent being that I'm going to teach you and you're going to be mine. And then, you know, just like,
He's like, I gave you music. You belong to me. You owe me something. You owe me your body and your talent and your presence. And it's just like, why are you falling for this?
Right. And it's, you know, obviously done to a very selfish end. Mm-hmm. It barely has anything to do with Christine at all. It sort of seems like where he just, you know, wants companionship and wants hot companionship. And
he should just fuck his wax doll.
I mean, he for sure does.
Yeah, but
he for sure does.
Like...
That doll. Oof. Let's watch
Maybe
it again
that's
and
why
be like,
fainted. That doll like smell the
congealed phantom cum.
Yeah,
phantom cum. Hey, speaking of other movies, I would argue that there is a Titanic illusion in the beginning of Phantom, there's the big reveal.
Go for it.
Bear with me. There's a big reveal of the chandelier, and then that all of a sudden we're gonna transition into the framing device, it's so bad. But whenever everything is like dusty and shitty, and then it transitions into like the nice shiny thing.
Look at these Schumacher nipples.
Yeah, the statue nipples.
That I think is a direct allusion to when in Titanic, when there's the shot of like the old, gross, grimy underwater Titanic, and then it fades into this like
Schumacher's like worked for them.
Yeah,
let's try it.
This is also a sweeping romance.
Yeah. Sure.
Does anyone have any other final thoughts about the movie The Phantom of the Opera?
I think the two people who do very well in this movie are Minnie Driver is great. Mm-hmm. I think Patrick Wilson escapes unscathed and does as well as anyone could do in this movie. I just love Patrick Wilson.
He's good, but his character so Raoul sucks.
There's a reason
he's
there's
so
like
boring.
A Raoul his fault. Fandom.
Yeah. Raoul's he's a bland man.
How about that scene?
And he's kind of pushy and I don't care for him.
What about that scene whenever she's sleeping in a room, gets up and then goes to the cemetery and he's just like sleeping outside of her room. Why is he doing this? He's looking, I guess,
he's like
protecting
her. But that's why I would argue that that's a choice because she sneaks past him.
Yeah,
she doesn't ask for permission before she goes somewhere.
True. She does make an active choice in that role.
Yeah, she does actively choose to rip his mask off. I forgot about that.
Oh, that is true. Yeah.
But something
that makes a lot more sense in the book.
Both times she
tells her, don't do this. And so she's like, I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
I think I will, actually.
And that's a pretty 16-year-old girl thing to do. Like, oh, you told me not to do that thing? Okay.
Yeah. But in the movies, both times it happens, it feels so unmotivated. Like, why is she doing...
I also love the way it's, like, shot where he's just kind of, like, piano, like, ducking his head back and forth. And, well, I mean, it's really funny in the show because she, like, reaches and he'll kind of, like, duck away like to write something. that's good stuff.
The reveal in the movie is so funny too because it's like that's not that bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, because I say like, watch the Live at the Royal Albert Hall version. It used to be on Netflix. I think maybe it still is. Might be like on Amazon or something now. Because I watched it with one of my more cynical friends who had seen the Schumacher movie and that was all he had ever seen. And like after that, it was just like, you know what? I get it. it's not for me, but like I get the Phantom thing because mm-hmm. so, it is honestly like kind of impressive how much the movie fails to capture what worked about the show, mm-hmm. even though it doesn't really change much about the story.
I am just going to go home and watch Moulin Rouge, the only musical I like, and South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. Everything else, I hate musicals. Hey, let's talk about whether or not the movie passes the Bechdel test.
Okay.
I'm going with no.
Yeah.
I don't think so either. There is a scene early on when Christine talks to Meg, but they're talking about Raoul. She's like, we were childhood sweethearts. He called me little Lottie or whatever. And then later on, they have a song where Christine and Meg sing to each other, and Christine is telling her about the angel of music, but they're talking about who she perceives to be a man who is sent.
They're talking about the Phantom.
Yeah. But she, at this point, doesn't know who he is and seems to never figure it out through the entire movie. There's a brief exchange between Madame Giry and Christine. No, it doesn't pass because this is after her first performance where she takes Carlotta's place. Mm. And Madame Giry's like,
You did
very well. He's very pleased.
Madame
Giry
is now my least favorite character in this entire
Madame Giry is just a whitewash because, you know, that character in the original novel was a Persian guy.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yeah. Who was never in any of the adaptations. Even in the Lon Chaney movie, they're like, psych, he's not actually Persian, he's a French guy.
Well, I love that reveal of, like, actually, they were white the whole time.
like in Hunchback.
She's
white. It's cool.
This is like 100% white. I don't think you see any people of color at any point.
Which is funny, because in the original book, that was not the case.
Hollywood whitewashing.
You see some non-white people in the Phantom flashback.
Oh, okay.
But the portrayal is not good.
Oh, right. Well, you're gross.
It was like the circus was run by Roma, right?
Right, yeah.
Mm. I think that's also there in all of the, or some of them. There's one book that like I despise and every other Phantom fan loves called Just Phantom by Susan Kay. And it's in the romance novel section. And for you, I know you're out there getting mad. I can feel your anger. I don't care. Your hate fuels me. Because like during his time with they use the G-slur, the Roma, they like kidnap him, put him in a circus, and there's one named Javert who like tries to rape him, and it's woof.
Okay. Well,
okay, so that's a hard no on Phantom.
Yeah, not
Phantom. By Phantom. Oh, they love it. They love it. The girls love it so much.
Yeah, if women talk in the movie, they're always talking about either Raoul or her daddy or the Phantom. I don't think there's an exchange about that's not any of those people.
Nope.
So, does not pass the test.
Nope.
Unsurprisingly. Let's rate the movie on our nipple scale.
I would actually say surprisingly, because musicals are usually a lot better at about that.
Yeah.
And also no shortage of opportunity, even like from an adaptation point, like we never hear any of the many female dancers we see all the time, any of the female chorus members, and there were missed opportunities sort of scattered.
When I say unsurprisingly, I mean more that this movie is not good to women or does not portray them in a strong way.
Oh, for sure.
So I'm speaking
Joel
more
Schumacher
specifically
does not know
to
what to do with women.
Oh, he sure doesn't.
It's like, I have dark eyeshadow, right?
I don't know. That's sexy, right?
Put the corset on the outside.
Some Captain Underpants.
Sexy Captain Underpants.
Schumacher! You're bad!
He's so bad.
You're bad.
Let's rate the movie on a nipple scale, where we rate the movie on a scale of 0 to 5 nipples based on its portrayal of women. Uh-huh. I'm going to say a half nimble because, hey, great that there is a woman in the story, even more than one. There's several. So that's pretty much the only positive thing about it. Apart from that, it's a movie about a young woman, again, being gaslit by every person around her, being seduced by an old creep. She is the object of his affection, emphasis on object, because she's really
He literally objectifies her in the real, like, he turns her into an object.
Yeah. A wax doll.
Yeah.
So.
You like it. And there's a dress.
And she faints.
Put it on.
And then she wakes up and she's like, actually, I could see myself hanging out with him again. Yeah, he's my angel of music.
It was just a bad first impression.
Right. Yeah. So that, and then her having no agency, no specific desire in the story, despite the fact that she's supposed to be the protagonist of the movie, the character that we're, you know, rooting for and plugging ourselves into and all that stuff. We have no idea what she wants. We hardly see her make any active choices or do anything. Decisions are either made for her or she just does fucking nothing and just stands by and watches. And then all the other female characters are similarly useless. Therefore, one half nipple, it belongs to the shiny golden statue nipple that we see in the Schumacher very nippy. Opening.
I just want to draw a parallel between Christine meeting the Phantom and then meeting someone that you met online. He's like talking through the wall. She's like, he sounds great. He sounds so nice. He thinks I'm so pretty. And then you meet him and he's like, he's a murderer.
Totally
he fucks dolls.
I've accidentally dated some doll fuckers. Not a good scene.
But you never. Then you see them. You're like, oh, for sure you have a sword collection. For sure you fuck dolls.
Oh, well, I don't want to hear about your katana, sir.
Oh, God. I can think of three different examples of like going to a man's house for the first time and being like, okay, there's a sword. I better just like see myself out.
Yeah. Hard pass.
I'm gonna give Phantom of the Opera 2004, directed by Joel Schumacher.
If you give it any more than zero nipples, I'm gonna be furious.
I'm gonna give it two nipples. I'm gonna do it.
No!
And I don't
defend yourself.
I'm sorry. First of all, I'm sorry.
You know what? Second of all, I'm not sorry.
I'm not sorry.
Sorry.
Because,
not sorry.
Okay, Madame Giry, especially in this movie, garbage, really like upset with her. Meg, nothing to do. We don't know. Carlotta, I think, is a good character who's mistreated by the story, particularly in this adaptation where she's just receiving abuse from angry poor people. Confusing. So I like Carlotta, and I do like. I think that Christine, sort of, in this movie in particular, and in the stage adaptation, suffers from the same thing that Bella Swan suffers from, where she is a very clear figure that a young audience can plug themselves into, sort of reacts to a lot of things, I think, in not too dissimilar to a way a teenage girl would, but then all the bad things that are happening to her are framed as good things.
It romanticizes
her being like, oh, just give in.
give in to the abuse.
The first boy who pays attention to you, you're going
to
want to marry him. You know, like, so it sucks to see, not realistic, but like a clear avatar that people can plug themselves into, have all the bad shit that happens to them framed as like, oh, yeah, just give up. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But I gotta give it two nipples. I have to.
Well, then I take back my half nipple. I'm giving it zero just to, when we average it out, to lower the score.
Is this like worse than so many of the movies that we've seen, though?
Yeah, that's like, what I'm thinking. What is the scale here? Because if it's on a scale of all movies, you know.
right, where it's like there's so many.
Maybe I'm biased because I hated this movie so much.
For sure. But there's like, I mean, I feel like if this movie gets zero nipples, then Twilight would have to certainly get zero nipples.
I think I gave
nipples.
Twilight pretty close to zero nipples.
I mean, we didn't give it a lot.
I gave Transformers, I think, zero nipples.
Yeah,
that's my thing. I'm like, I don't know, because like to me, zero nipples would be like Transformers 3, you know, like, because I'm just like, compared to that, I'm like, boy, this is pretty good, you guys. I don't know what you're talking about. Maybe it's because I watched a lot of Transformers.
Which is a great series.
Yeah, check out Lindsay's.
Oh yeah, The Whole Plate.
It's
my series about film theory and Transformers.
It's very good.
It's great. Lots of things I had certainly never thought about in regards to Transformers.
I think
before.
About Transformers a lot. I don't know if it shows.
I think on the scale of movies we've covered here, it certainly does not do well, but I don't know. I mean, I think we're biased in opposite directions. I'm certainly biased in wanting to give it more nipples than it deserves because I love it. Phantom rules. I'm going to see it again. I'll see the movie again. I'll see the stage adaptation again, but I recognize that, you know, feminist icon Phantom of the Opera? I think not.
No.
Two nipples. Christine gets the nipples.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Lizzie, what about you?
Again, for aforementioned reasons, where if like zero is Transformers 3, I'm going to have to go with 2.5 for reasons that you outlined. Like Carlotta, actually, no, I'm going to go back down to 2 because I feel like stage show I'd give more because Carlotta doesn't receive that unjust abuse and like Christine is a little more I mean, there's a lot of strange decisions in that. But, you know, I think the fact that Christine is just sort of like a cipher in this, you know, is a huge disservice. But at the same time, it's like, man, there's a lot of really bad representations out there on the grand scheme. I'm like, it's better than Twilight.
It is better than Twilight.
I don't know. I think it's about around the same.
Really?
I feel like that ending, though, because, like, she ends up with Edward. She does not end up with the Phantom.
Right, right.
But then she ends up with Raoul, who had also been gaslighting her and, like, being all weird. And he's like, you're a woman, so I need to protect you. And also, there is no Phantom of the Opera. You're crazy.
But also, now,
give the man some room to, you know, be wrong. He can't be perfect.
You gotta have room to grow.
It changes my view of Raoul a little bit that they're supposed to be the same age. I think that that's another sort of thing that is almost never true in the stage version, or and certainly not in the movie version, where they never appear to be the same age. In reality, if they are, if you know, suspend your disbelief, Patrick Wilson and Emmy Rossum are the same age, sure. That makes Raoul a little more palatable. I mean, I still don't like that character.
There is no Raoul fandom in the grand, like, everyone.
There's no Team Raoul.
Yeah, there's no Team Raoul. It's funny.
Well, gang, that was the Phantom of the Opera episode.
Hope you liked it.
I am so glad we did it.
Yeah.
I'm really
glad. Me too.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us, Lindsay.
Thank you for having me. I'm, of all the topics, I'm glad it was this one.
Yay.
One of my favorites.
And where can people find you online?
Well, I like on YouTube, it's my name on YouTube is just my name, it's Lindsay Ellis. You can also find me on Twitter at the Lindsay Ellis.
Awesome. Yay. Mm-hmm. You can follow us on all the platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everything at BechdelCast. You can donate to our Patreon. If you do, it's $5 a month and you get 2 bonus episodes a month of the podcast.
Hey, that's
so
fun.
Yeah. And you can go to patreon.com/BechdelCast to do that. We strongly encourage it because it helps with our production costs. And then we have great bonus episodes for you guys, the fans.
With PH.
The PH.
I love it. I love it.
Also, you should go to our live show.
Oh my word.
Oh,
heavens to Betsy.
Wait, what does Kathy Bates say?
Oh my stars and stripes.
God almighty.
That's what she says. She says, God almighty.
What we're trying to say is that we have a live show in Los Angeles.
We sure do.
At the Nerdist showroom at Meltdown Comics.
Yeah. We're sitting on top of it right now.
God. It's on Saturday, December 2nd at 7 p.m.
Yes.
We have a guest. Her name is Deborah DiGiovanni.
You know her, you love her. She's one of our most popular episodes of all time.
Love, actually. But this time, we are talking with her about Die Hard.
Bing, ba, bing, bing, bing. A Christmas movie.
That's dripping with masculinity.
Oh, we cannot wait to yell and scream.
So, if you're in SoCal, baby, check it out,
dude. You can't say SoCal without saying baby.
SoCal, dude.
SoCal, baby, rock on, surfers, and also longboards.
Yeah.
That's what they say every time they talk about the area we call SoCal baby.
So if you're there in that area, please come to our live show. Tickets are only $10. And if you do come, bring some feminine hygiene products, because we're going to donate them to an organization called Project Caged Birds. They do a lot of help with, like, victim advocacy of intimate partner abuse. So
we love that organization. So please, yes, bring something with you and come to the goddamn show. You're going to have a blast.
It's going
to
be so much
fun. We got a lot of treats planned.
You might get a free movie ticket out of it.
Not to spoil anything, but we talked about it yesterday. And this time we made a plan. So, hot brag. We're trying up here.
We're ready.
Season 2.
We're prepared.
Can't wait to try up here. Season 2, Saturday, December 2nd.
Yeah.
See you there.
Bye.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. Undercover Tourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. Undercover Tourist.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.